Welcome to another episode of Disrupt. I'm HHCN editor Andrew Donlin. Today we're talking to Rich Tinsley, Chief Development Officer at Help at Home. Help at Home is one of the fastest growing and also largest providers of home-based care in the U.S. I ran into Rich this past week in Las Vegas, and we decided to sit down for a conversation afterwards about his past in home-based care and the company's future plans. Before we get into that discussion, I want to give a shout out to our podcast sponsor, Home Care Home Base. It's time to give Home Care Home Base another look. The same HCHB solution used by today's leading home health and hospice agencies to drive consistent growth and exceptional patient care is now more affordable than ever. There's never been a better time to look at Home Care Home Base. To learn how HCHB can help you scale up efficiency while scaling down cost, visit hchb.com today. Okay, Rich, thank you so much for joining us on Disrupt. Like I said, in an undisclosed location in Las Vegas, where we saw each other earlier this week. And before anything else, I just want to get a rundown of you for our audience, where you work now, where you come from, and just how you got into the home-based care space generally.
Sure. Thanks, Andrew, for having me first. So, Rich Tinsley, I'm the Chief Development Officer responsible for growth and integration of new businesses at Help at Home. I've been doing this activity for a bunch of different companies for a long time. It's hard to believe it's 25 plus years I've been in this industry. Started off doing this type of work for consulting and law firms, Ernst & Young and other law firms, and then went quickly into the corporate area. Andrew, you probably know me best for the last seven or eight years at Stone Ridge Partners, where we brokered some transactions. But I spent most of my career in the provider world, and end of last year, made the jump back into this fray. So Help at Home, can we describe Help at Home to you a little bit, Andrew?
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you.
So Help at Home is 45 years old. We're the largest provider of in-home care or in-home personal care, you know, assistance with daily living, ADLs. We are in 11 states. We're the number one provider, the largest provider in a handful of states, Illinois, Indiana, Pennsylvania, and New York. Coming out of last year, we're about $1.5 billion in revenue. We have about 190 branches across those 11 states where we provide in-home care, community-based services to about 65,000 clients every month. And we have about 50,000 highly trained caregivers that provide that care. So that's kind of us in a nutshell. So we are about we're in the high 90 percentile, 95-98% government funded, and it's all state funded Medicaid type programs. We have currently have very little exposure to Medicare.
Okay, and two follow up questions, Rich. So firstly, why did you want to go to the provider side again? And then also secondly, why Help at Home specifically?
So I wasn't looking to go back to the provider side. I had a really nice career. These guys here, when you look at the spectrum of the business, of all in-home care businesses, we are in the home longer every week and keep our clients, you know, years, not weeks and months. We have an insight into our clients that no one else has, other providers and other businesses that are more episodic. We are not. We're long-term in the home with our clients. So that was always very appealing to me. And then when I met the management team and they gave me their proposal, what they wanted to do, where they wanted to grow the business, and a lot of the senior team, the team that I'm part of, a lot of us are what I would call more payer backgrounds, and their philosophy about how they wanted to go after growth and impact the industry was very, very appealing to me, right? It's not always a rate conversation. It's the well-being of the clients. And long-term, I think a company like ours is best positioned to have the biggest impact on the overall healthcare cost and keeping people healthy at home for a longer period of time. So when it just took some time, but by the time we had these conversations, it wasn't like I was looking to jump back into the provider world. This was just an opportunity to jump into one that was the right fit and doing things the right way and had a desire to have a high impact on the people they care for, more so than just the daily activities, right? It was also the lowering the cost, providing care as long as possible in the home, bringing bringing the healthcare piece to home and helping in that aspect. That makes sense, Andrew?
Yeah, absolutely. And Rich, also, I know that most of the executive team is relatively new to the company. I think besides one person, maybe everyone's come to the company within the last year or 2 years. Has that been helpful just in terms of all being on the same page from the get-go?
Well, the company's 45 years old. It has had two. This is the second time that we've had an equity sponsor. So we have two equity sponsors, one out of Chicago, Vistria, and Centerbridge out of New York. And Wellsprings is still in, that was in the first round as well. So the three of them are our equity sponsors. Centerbridge and Vistria came in roughly 18 months, quickly approaching 24 months ago, at which time it took a few months, but they put their team in place, and we've rounded that out over the last year. So you're correct. Everybody's there from about 6 months to 18 months. And it has helped. Part of that vision of what I talked about, what the company wanted to do and how we want to impact healthcare and the cost of providing healthcare. And even though our services are personal care services, the fact that we're in the home for such a long period of time every week and keep the clients for you know, years, not days and months, weeks or months. And the philosophy behind this management team was a big reason that I came.
And so in terms of the nuts and bolts, Rich, obviously you were brought on to help with the growth strategy. You guys had a very exciting enter into the New York market and a very big enter the New York market recently. Can you give us a background on that entrance and then also explain how that's changed the scale of the company and maybe what you're looking to do next in terms of growth after that?
Sure. So that transaction happened in April. We've been working on it for several months. You know, like I said, coming out of 21 with that transaction included, we're about $1.5 billion. So that's where we stand from a size perspective. Mm-hmm. New York is obviously a very large Medicaid market that we wanted to be in. And we found two great companies to join with us in this transaction that we did in New York. And we're very excited about it and are looking to grow the New York market at the same pace that we're growing the rest of the company. So it's very exciting. So when you talk about you haven't asked me about growth strategy yet, but we really want to build out our density and our current footprint.
Got it.
But at the same time, we're looking to expand into new markets and provide the service, but we just got to make sure we can provide that density. So the acquisition we made in New York gives us that footprint, mostly in the city and in the boroughs, and it allows us to grow that business and do tuck-ins going forward.
And so once you have that entrance in the New York market and you got those two providers, was it easier to start thinking about building out density in other areas also in New York?
Yeah. So we're actively pursuing growth in the New York market. Yeah. So I guess I'll answer your question. We're looking for other acquisitions and other growth in New York, along with the other markets that we have high density in, Pennsylvania and the others that I mentioned earlier. But we're also looking to grow density in our other states like Ohio, Georgia, Michigan, Missouri, you know, the other states that we have as well, we're looking to grow density as well.
And are there any other states, Rich, that you all are looking at right now that you might want to enter into, or is that still too far out to say?
It's not too far out to say. We don't publicly identify where we might go or may not. We're looking at a lot of different transactions in a lot of different states. I'm not sure we want to jump across the country for a one-off state, unless it made a lot of sense or had some size to it, given our geographic. We're going to be diligent and disciplined around our geographic footprint. But the answer is, if it makes sense, it's a good platform as we enter a new state, we'll do it. And we have plans to grow this business, continue to grow this business over the next 2 or 3 years.
So, Rich, switching gears here a little bit. So there's obviously a lot of exciting things going on with Medicaid right now, especially under this administration with home and community-based services. And also, you know, there's this extension where states can do more with the funding, you know, up until 2025, I believe it is now, to do some innovative things and invest and expand home and community-based services. What does that mean for you as a provider?
Well, obviously, a lot of that stuff came aboard during the pandemic to shore up a lot of the companies. Mm-hmm. And the question becomes, how long does it stay. It appears to be going through, as you mentioned, 2025. And the thought process is that that'll continue to be, I don't want to use the word permanent, but it'll continue to be part of the reimbursement going forward. So it's good for the industry, and it allows us to provide the services and recruit the people that we need to recruit.
Okay. And are you bullish on, you mentioned not saying permanent, but are you bullish in general on Medicaid as a payer source and just in general, the payer sources that you guys are working with right now? Obviously, we were just at a conference together. Like I said before, there's a lot of home health providers that aren't so happy with Medicare fee-for-service as they're potentially having their rates cut. So how do you feel about your payer sources right now?
Yeah, so I feel really good. So when the word permanent, none of these rates are permanent, right? They're all subject to adjustments or changes in the states, right? So we feel like the reimbursement is very stable, and we're very bullish on where it sits today and what in the future brings. And as we build density, we provide more services to our payers and to the states and to our clients that will benefit all of the above, right? These clients want to stay in the home. They want to stay in the home as long as possible. CMS even provides data that shows that in studies. It's typically the lowest cost setting. That's why everybody's talking about it over the last several years. And we're starting to see we can drive outcomes. So I and we as a team are very bullish on the future of what we're doing.
Okay, great. And then so, you mentioned earlier, Rich, that in New York, for instance, it's such a big Medicaid market that it made sense for you guys to be there. Is there anything a state could do from a policy perspective that would make them more of an enticing state to enter into, or is it just mostly based on the potential patients?
That's probably a separate podcast all by itself, Andrew. Okay. So states that, obviously, I don't want to say rates don't matter because rates do matter, but it's really looking at what services and what outcomes you want the provider, you want someone like us, a provider, to provide to the clients, right? So we try to take a holistic approach about what's best for the client and where we're going. How to do that. So, we have several factors when we look at a state being attractive. Obviously, density is one of the biggest ones. There has to be a margin spread, right, between what we're getting paid and what we recruit at. But it also has to be a partnership with either the Medicaid program directly or a managed care company if the state's going in that direction to work through what they want to do with that population as well, right? So it's all the above. It's not one item that makes a difference for us. It's a combination of the culture of the state, what they want to do, how we fit into that as a partner.
That definitely makes sense. And, in terms of staffing, which you just mentioned, recruiting, we don't have to specifically go into that because obviously we all know it's an issue by now, at least I hope so. But in terms of growth strategy, is that something you guys consider if we grow more, the more caregivers we get?
It's a challenge, right? It's a challenge for every business in 2022 and going forward, and probably will continue to be a challenge. In our industry, it's different than the challenges in home health because we're not recruiting the nurses necessarily in all of our markets. It's a different type, but we feel well positioned on what we're doing in the package that we offer and the way we recruit and the speed that we recruit. We're very bullish on our ability to perform better than the rest of the market. Not saying it's not a challenge. It's just, it's one of our strengths compared to our competition and compared to the way people are doing that. And it's hard to say it's an upside for us because the whole recruitment and retention issues in our industry are one of the biggest ones facing. It's one of the biggest headwinds facing us. But we feel like what we're doing, we're making headway, making progress against our competitors.
Okay. And so, Rich, once again, we were at the same conference this week with a lot of at-home care providers. It was Knox Financial Management Conference. Was there anything that you learned here this week or that you thought was surprising that providers were talking about?
Surprising is probably not the right word. I mean, there's a lot of conversation around the Medicare home health benefit and the changes in reimbursement that take effect towards the end of the year. So that wasn't a surprise. But that was a lot of the chatter, right? And how is that going to work and what is that going to do? And can the behaviors change of those providers to offset the cuts in reimbursement?
Yeah. And again, it just, for you, especially if you feel good about your payment environment, it does paint a little bit of a stark difference between the two different industries or sectors, however you want to put it right now. Okay, Rich, the last thing I'll leave you with is, what do you think is the biggest challenge moving forward? And maybe if we can, let's exclude staffing unless you really want to hone in on another point. And then what's the biggest opportunity moving forward in your mind?
Biggest challenges. So staffing is, you know, if you list one, two, or three biggest challenges, staffing's got to be there, right? Staffing and retention is all. So the blocking and tackling in our business is staffing and recruiting. We try to focus on the caregiver as the most important role in our company. And that's one of the ways that we're tackling that. And I would say that's probably, it's hard to argue it's not our number one challenge, right? But it is by far the one that gets the most press right now. And it probably is our number one challenge. Other items is just trying to collect. So we talked about outcomes. We need to be able to collect the outcomes and provide information back to ourselves, to our clients, to everybody in the organization, and to the other partners in the healthcare system and the payers in the system. That's an opportunity and a challenge for us, for the industry. We feel like we're tackling that pretty well. Opportunities is this is a growing market, right? It's quickly, it's increasing for a bunch of reasons. The demographics are increasing. States are putting more money behind it. So there's a lot of opportunity. You know, this industry is not new by any means, but people are starting to realize the impact it can have on an individual, their well-being, their enjoyment of staying at home, and their overall health care. So that's another opportunity as people continue to see those benefits. And we get higher density in our current states, and we grow into other markets, other states.
All right, great, Rich. Is there anything else that you want to add that we did not touch on today?
No, I think we covered it, Andrew. I appreciate the time.
All right, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks again to our podcast sponsor, Homecare Homebase. And thank you again for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health, home care, and hospice industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. I'm Andrew Donlin. This has been a production of Aging Media Network, Chicago, Illinois.